This is a Defocus Media production.
Hello, my Chain Reaction Nation. Thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, Clark Chang. We're talking about eye care innovation with a special flair on cornea and contact lenses. Please show my guest and myself some love and like, share, subscribe, comment on every episode. Don't forget to follow us on your favorite social media channels, and I will meet you inside of the Chain Reaction. Well, welcome to the Chain Reaction, friends. Have I got a treat for you today? I've been waiting to talk to my next guest, Dr. Tom Arnold, for a real long time, and I finally cornered him. And we're lucky, really, to catch him today, right before he embarks to another exotic international destination to share his wealth of knowledge on scleral lenses with optometrists and ophthalmologists all over the world. And so from his early start as a research assistant for the early treatment diabetic retinopathy study, we know that as the ETDRS study, at the University of Texas Medical School in Houston, to now a social media titan and international keynote speaker. Dr. Arnold really truly has covered a lot of grounds, both professionally and geographically. So Tom, I hope you don't mind me staying on first name basis here. Can you fill in for our listeners on what I may have missed from your impressive CV?
Yeah, I think about 50% of it's made up, Clark. it is fun to be able to speak to doctors all over the world about this really exciting technology. I'm very excited about it. It's really infused my practice with a lot of passion, and it's great to be able to share that excitement with other doctors in America, but also, as you said, around the world.
I cannot imagine that there's anybody who actually needs more supplementary information unless they've been living under a rock for the last few years. But could you tell us a little bit about where you practice and, you know, your location and modality of setting, that type of thing?
Sure. Yeah, I've been in practice 34 years, about 8 years in ophthalmology and research, big clinics. And I started my own practice 25 years ago. And I've always enjoyed contact and pursued, you know, the specialty lenses as they were. But you can imagine the last 25 years, the whole game's changed. So I have a traditional practice. I have two other doctors that work with me, and we do everything that every other optometrist does. We sell glasses and solutions and sunglasses. But as the technology has come about and improved, we have new devices, new lenses, obviously, and the technologies go with them. And we just found that it helps so many people in such dramatic ways. I just really started focusing on this just about not quite 6 years ago. So in my career, this is very late in the game, and it's been very exciting.
It's an amazing success story that I can't wait to get into. And hopefully we can have you go on and inspire the entire next generation of optometrists and ophthalmologists. So I want to get into the meat of things here. I'm sure tons of our doctors out there, and myself included, are wondering, you touched up on it a little bit, how you have embraced this technologies of scleral lenses and created such a successful scleral lens practice in just a short period of time of, like you said, about 6 years. And I would want to point out, under almost of a corporate slash maybe group practice setting, no less, which most people think it's almost impossible to do. So as a starter, I would love for you to tell us what made you decide to, you know, incorporating this technology and developing a scleral lens practice.
Sure. Actually, I did it under duress. I really didn't want to. about 6 years ago, we had a busy practice, you know, two-doctor practice, and we're busy selling four boxes of this and eight boxes of that, and here's your coupon, and here's your special sunglasses. We were just going along like everybody else, and, you know, I had a number of people with keratoconus, had a number of people with post-RK, and we were fitting them in lenses, but I had a couple of keratoconus patients who I had been following and fitting, and they just got worse and worse and very severe, so I sent them to the corneal surgeon that I've worked with ever since I graduated, and he started sending them back saying, no, fit them in a scleral, where I thought they needed penetrating keratoplasty. And I said, well, I don't have time for that. I'm too busy. We'll send them over to the University of Houston to my good friend, Dr. Bergmanson. And that happened a couple of times. And I said, well, shoot, I guess I need to learn this technology. I went to a course hosted by GPLI in Dallas with Greg Denier, who's very well known, and Ed Bennett, who we all know. It was a day long, sclerals and especially GPs. And I said, okay, well, I'll dive in. And I ordered a kit, talked to a lab, and I got a kit and came came home and started fitting them. So I kind of backed into it. But once you have a couple of successes and see the way these lenses can change a person's life, it's very invigorating. And I just embraced it wholeheartedly from that point on.
Well, that's amazing. So you're like as a dental celebrity, really, because you didn't want to do it. And now you are doing it. Like, it's from your social media posts, it just looks like you're doing it every single day and with such passion and such joy.
Yeah, we had two new dispenses today and three new fits in a practice. I mean, we're doing other things as well, but that's the demand.
Yeah, that's amazing. So enlighten some of our listeners out there, especially those who are still thinking, you know, it's just not possible in whether one person private setting or I'm in a group setting, I'm in a corporate setting. Tell us a little bit about what are some of the challenges or struggles to you as a practitioner when you first decided that you want to commit to focusing on a scleral lens technology in your practice.
Well, there is a learning curve. Like some of the new graduates now, people have graduated in the last few years, have had some exposure to scleral lenses. You know, folks like me who graduated, we knew the inventors of this stuff were so long ago. The learning curve is steep because the terminology is all different. I remember getting that first kit that I ordered 6 years ago and opening up and, you know, what's sag? You know, what's the increase or decrease medium profile? You know, what's flats? What is all that stuff? And also when I started, I didn't know anybody that fit these lenses other than, you know, going to that course. So there is a learning curve. You have to be willing to spend a little time and there's many resources now. But talking about the different settings, sometimes people come up to me at meetings and say, well, you know, it's really interesting. It's exciting. That looks really cool. But I don't have any patients like that. You know, I see patients like that. And I would like to tell everybody, my belief is you do see patients who have dry eyes, who have irregular astigmatism, who have post-RK or post-LASIK ectasia. We're a lot better about picking up keratoconus earlier now. So you have to be willing and open to the possibility of talking to your patients about a different lens modality and then educating yourself and learning to fit that. We all see patients and they all have eyes, and whether they go into a commercial setting or your big ophthalmology group or some storefront or some specialty practice, you know, you don't know who's going to walk in. Everybody's unique.
And I agree with what you're saying about, you know, all our patients, where they all have eyes. And if we're lucky, they all have two eyes. So you could do two contact lenses on them, right? So that's great. It's a lot of education value here for people to just know that, you know, looking at where you are now, 6 years after you decided to embrace the technology compared to some of the things that you experienced at the beginning and two different ball games, and that, you know, sometimes just take a little bit of work, commit to something, and realize that once you have faith in the technology and in what you're doing and the value you're delivering to the community, you start finding people either will come to you, like a lot of people coming to your practice from all over the world that I see a lot of times on social media, as well as just feeling, I think it's a lot of it is about your comfort and as well as patients' comfort level, right?
I think that's true, but you need to let the community know, the larger community of fellow optometrists and ophthalmologists and rheumatologists and oculoplastics people. You need to reach out and tell people you're interested in this, you're committing yourself to this, and none of us have a big enough practice where it's all specialty lens all the time. Now, some people do, but that's not the general population. So it's important if you start embracing this technology and wanting to fit these patients to go visit other doctors in your community, no matter what their practice situation or modality, and tell them you're interested and you would like to see their patients, and you will send them back and, you know, share the information with that doctor. We always invite doctors who refer patients to us for specialty fitting to come with them, you know, to learn. I'm very much in the sharing mode, but if you're going to build a practice, you need to solicit these fits from other doctors who are not embracing the technology.
And that's such a valuable tip. Do you have other quick tips in terms of how you go about finding these specialists, identify who they would be? Do you show up with your business card? Do you show up with a letter of intent or, you know, a hello letter? What do you show up with?
Yeah, that's a great question. We make a little packet that just from Office Depot. We put in, we make up a little folder. It has our bios in there. It has what scleral lenses are about, maybe a brochure on scleral lenses, something about why scleral lenses, you know, keratoconus, dry eyes, just some general information. And if we're visiting the doctor, then we have a page, a referral sheet, very simple, that referring doctor can fill out, you know, name, reason for visit. If they have insurance, we like to know. So, you know, sometimes it's covered. And we have a little letter in there describing medical necessity and our guidelines for filing on insurance. And so we urge the referring doctor to give that to the patient. If they want to fill out that little form, that helps us a lot. And that way the patient knows why they're coming to us. And also in that package, we have some web links, like some YouTube links and some things like to the Scleral Lens Education Society, so that that patient who may not understand exactly why they're being referred can go and do a little research. So yeah, I go with a little packet. Since are slow and you can just pop in and the doctor's happy to see you, or they just don't really take appointments. Big practices, I think you ought to call ahead and just find a convenient time so that you can spend just a few minutes to introduce yourself to the doctor or doctors and give them a packet, a little handshake, and I think it goes a long way.
Yeah, and safe to say, show up looking your best, right?
Yeah, look sharp. Yeah, sure. You know, I do a lecture on building a practice, and that's a very good point. When you go to another doctor or optometrist, somebody that you want to join their team, essence, so you need to look like them. So you need to look professional, because if that doctor is going to hand their patient off to you, they want to make sure that patient has the same level of quality. So yeah, dress the part.
I completely agree. And listeners, in case you haven't figured out, today we're going to talk about scleral lenses, right? So hopefully there's no surprise there. And if you haven't figured out that by this time, you might as well just stay and listen to the entire podcast. And I also encourage that you should go online and look up Dr. Tom Arnold. You see how sharply dressed he is every single time I see him.
Well, I have to keep up with you, Clark. It's a high bar.
So Tom, let's walk let's unlock some of the successes of your practice. Let's pretend that walking inside of your scleral lens practice. I want listeners out there at whatever level, whether they're just starting to think about fitting scleral lenses, have done some, or have had a lot of fits under their belt, it's always helpful to exchange tips from another practitioner, especially at the level that you are. So let's pretend that we're at the beginning. I'm a patient walking into your practice. We're at the beginning of a contact lens evaluation process. So walk us through how you decide if this patient who is now, you know, presenting in front of you, how do you decide whether or not the candidacy qualifies for scleral lens, and how do you decide what lens to match this patient up with?
Yeah, that's, again, another great question. Their history is the main thing. Of course, we all know the value of taking a good history. Yeah, why are they there? A lot of patients who come to us for scleral lenses, if they're not referred by another doctor, then they're self-referred because they've had RK, or they've been diagnosed with keratoconus, or maybe they have severe dry eyes. So the history is the obvious thing. And then you need thorough exam. Look at the cornea. A lot of it is just you look at your own eyes, and then you decide what is their previous contact lens experience, if anything, what are their expectations. And, you know, the general thing that we all do in our exams every day, I'm a big believer in you need to have a good topographer so you can see what's going on with the cornea. But using your own two eyes, Greg Denier taught me a great tip, is you look at the patient just face to face, and then you look at them on a profile, have them look right ahead and look at them 90 degrees. And what's that cornea look like? Is it flat? Is it normal? Is it steep? For keratoconus, you can look for Munson sign, of course. But using your own eyes and then examining the eye in the slit lamp, retinoscopy, it can be a lost art, but it shouldn't be. You know, what kind of scissor, do they have scissor reflex or regular astigmatism? Just a very thorough evaluation will point you in the direction you want to go. Not everybody needs a scleral lens. I love scleral lenses and obviously passionate about it, but there's cases that are more appropriate for a rigid gas permeable lens, and I will fit them, you know, whenever that's appropriate. Well, if really it's what's the situation, what's the history, what's that cornea look like, you know, what are their expectations? One thing we talk about, is it a prolate cornea? Is it a steep cornea as in keratoconus? Or is it more of an oblate cornea, which is post-RK or post-LASIK ectasia or a graft, someone who's had a penetrating keratoplasty? And so we have lens kits now like Zen Lens, the Bausch & Lomb Specialty Vision lens, which is really great lens. In their fitting kit, you look at the horizontal visible iris diameter, how big is the eye? Under a certain value, you use the smaller lens. Over a certain value, use the larger lens. And so that picks your diameter of the lens. Diameter in scleral lens fitting is very, very important to fit the right diameter to the eye. And then, like in the little Zen Lens kit, you have the prolate lenses in one row, and you have the oblate lenses in another row. So it makes fitting very straightforward. And from there on, you're putting a trial lens on and assessing the fit.
Wow, that's great. And do you have any personal guideline, understanding that obviously more research out there likely will kind of have to come to a consensus, but do you personally have, since you've talked about the HVID, your horizontal visible iris diameter, in terms of guiding you in selecting diameters out of your diagnostic kit, be it Zen lens or whatever it is that is your go-to, you know, scler lens set, do you have a personal guideline where if it's this size or under, I would like to start with this size or this brand, and if there's a, if the HVID is greater than a certain value, then I like to start with a, something else. Do you have anything like that?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's exactly right. These different lenses, these different scler lenses from all the companies, they have, in any lens design, they'll have their little range of diameters. They'll have, in this lens, I'll have two diameters or three diameters. Some have a wide range. So you don't need six fitting kits. You don't need half a dozen. Find one or two brands that you like and stick with, and you will kind of what they call mini sclerals, and then you'll have your general sclerals. So, you know, in general, find something that's on the smaller side than on the bigger side. Again, it's based on how big is your eye. Rule of thumb, very simple rule of thumb, is you want that lens to be about 1.5 millimeters wider than the HVID on either side. You don't want to be hugging right down on the limbus, but you don't want a huge lens either. So, So that's a very, very important thing to look at, is the horizontal or visible iris diameter. And you can look at it and just take it with a ruler, real simple. A lot of topographers will give you an estimation of that as well.
Yeah, I love it when the instruments to actually give you a white to white.
Yeah.
Because I just feel like that can be the accuracy to a point few millimeters so much more accurate, I think, than my approximation, even if I'm using a ruler as a guidance. So yeah, those are great tips. And so we've talked about patient history, using your own eyes to examine anatomy, shape analysis, hopefully using a tomographer like you've mentioned from your practice. And it's just obviously sounds like you have all the toys in the world in your clinic. So once you determine that this is a person based on their history and all the things that we've talked about, I want to fit this person in a scleral lens, what then do you think after that process, and then you have diagnostic fitting or your virtual fitting, what then do you find when you customize your lens and the lenses are here, you're going to dispense the lens to your patient? What are some of your protocols or useful tips that you could give our, perhaps the more novice doctors who are wanting to know what should they do when one of their first couple patients show up, and how do they instruct these patients?
We're talking about dispensing them at the time of dispensing?
Correct.
Yeah. We go over the lenses. We have the patient put the lenses on at that time. For trial fitting, we put them on and analyze the eye, and we wait to train them when they pick them up. So we have them put the lenses on. We do fill the bowl with saline, of course, and we dab a little fluorescein in there. We have them put them on, and as the lenses are settling, then the staff member is going over the follow-up schedule, the care, and explain the kit to them and the solution. So the lenses are kind of settling while this is being explained. We set up their first follow-up visit 10 to 14 days afterwards. That's a real good tip I learned from my good friend John Gellies, and that is, don't bring them back too quickly. That is, the lenses settle over time. There's a learning curve with insertion and removing, so you don't want to bring that patient back too suddenly. So we want to give them some time with the lenses to see all the changes that are going to occur. So the staff member will set that appointment up. So when I see them back in the chair, I'm looking at them. We check their vision binocularly. We just want to make sure they see the chart, they're comfortable, the lenses look good. I'm going to look at them at the slit lamp, make sure there's no bubbles, make sure it's fitting the way I think it should be fitting. And that is a real pat on the back. That a boy, that you're going to love them, you know, give them a lot of confidence. We don't spend a lot of time over refracting that lens. If they see and if they're comfortable, we just give them a lot of assurance, and we do a lot of the detailed work when they come back at their first follow-up.
Yeah, and it definitely the devil's in the details, and I completely agree with the not seeing patients back so soon, because we're used to having patients come back thinking, you know, with a disposable soft lens and the science has worked out pretty well, you either fit or you don't. And so within a short period of time, you're able to tell. I completely agree that this is something that there are so many more things that patients need to slowly familiarize themselves with and discover how wonderful this is for them. And it takes a while for that to kick in. And so seeing them the next day really doesn't do this type of technology justice. So if we're talking about seeing patients back, like you said, a lot of details when they come back. Give us a little quick description on what are the useful things to look out for, tools to use when during your follow-ups.
Sure. Our protocol when they return is we want the lens to be in the eye at least 4 hours. So we don't want to see them first thing in the morning. We want to see them back after, like we said, about 10 days or so. And then when we see them back on that day, we want that lens in at least 4 hours or more. So all the settling has taken place. So the staff member will check the vision when they arrive. They'll dab a little fluorescein on the superior bulbar conjunctiva. Let them look down and have a good strip of fluorescein in each eye. We have an OCT. So they will take them back and do an OCT on them to see the central clearance, the limbal clearance, the landings, all these things. And then they'll put them in the room where I can observe, is that fluorescein? Do we have some tear exchange? Is the fluorescein getting under the lens? You know, make sure the lens not sucked on. I slit lamping them to see that, look at how it's landing, all the, you know, if there's any areas of impingement or distress. And I'm looking at the OCT as confirmation. And then just chatting with them. And at that point, if I may do an over-refraction, scope them, make any little adjustments, I'm happy to. But the reason you want them to come back after some period of time is that if you, maybe there's an over-refraction change, maybe we need a little more clearance in the limbus or centrally, maybe we're going to do a toric landing, toric haptic, or adjust the toric haptic that's already there. You want to make all the changes at once. You know, you don't want them one back and over-refract. Then the 2 weeks or a month later, okay, now we're changing the haptic and so forth. So that's my follow-up schedule. We usually see them back. We have a 90-day fitting period of which all their visits are covered. So my general follow-up is 10 to 14 days, and then maybe a month after that, and then maybe another month or 6 weeks, and then done in 90 days.
That's great. Yeah, again, those are very useful tips for anybody, whether you're just starting to think about incorporating scleral lens technology or that you're looking to streamline your practice. I think there's a lot of pearls there to take away, and that's great. And so, again, listeners haven't kind of sensed this about Dr. Arnold. He's a technology guy, uses a lot of, has all the latest and the greatest in his clinic and, you know, incorporating that into his fitting process, his evaluation process and follow-up process. So I've got then a quick question for you. Let's talk technology for a little bit about lens technologies. What do you think has been the most innovative breakthroughs in the field of scleral lens technologies in the, let's just say in the past few years that have created like the largest impact to your practice?
Yeah, that's a great question. And in fact, I think Ed Bennett sent out a survey last year among the GPLI members, the Gas Permeable Lens Institute members, and he asked that. And I think we asked to rank it. And you know, the greatest impact that it's been in this field, honestly, is HydraPEG. So it's not a lens, it's not a piece of equipment, it's that coating, because we all struggle with coatings on the lens. A lot of these people have bad lids, they have meibomian gland dysfunction, they have dry eyes, they're unhealthy eyes. And so we fight to keep the lenses clean. So my vote in that survey was Tangible Science HydraPEG. I just think it's made a huge difference, because whether you are fitting corneal lenses or scleral lenses, now it's even available in some soft lenses. I think that's a huge, huge thing. The other thing that I think is really, it's been well recognized now, are toric peripheries. You know, the fact that many, many practitioners realize that for lenses of almost any diameter, the sclera is highly toric and it doesn't match corneal toricity. And in fact, I know you read this article, Clark, about 6 months ago. It was a study on mapping scleral shapes by Jason Jedlicka and Sheila Morrison, Greg Denier, and a whole bunch of people. And they found 12 identifiable, unique scleral shapes. That was just crazy. They synthesized it down to 4. So a lot of the kits now all have toric peripheries that you can order. And just recognizing that you have to align. And that's probably the biggest challenge in scleral lens fitting, is to center the lens and align it well to the sclera. And so those two, I'd vote for HydraPEG, and that the fact that most of these lenses now can be ordered with a toric haptic.
No, I definitely agree with that. That's such a good, I don't remember what the order is in term from that survey, but I definitely agree with your ranking. So quickly about, let's go the opposite way. What would be one or maybe two, or, you know, just your top one is fine too, in terms of innovations that you haven't seen, what's your wish list? What do you want to see possible in scleral lens in the next few years?
Something that should be fairly easy to get quickly, and that is decentering the optics. despite your best efforts, they may not center just right because of all these issues with the sclera. So we talk a lot about higher order aberrations and wavefront and all that, and that's a high bar. Some people are working on that and have worked on that. But for the rest of us, the rank and file, that's something that we think about, that why can't this person see clearly? Why is it 20/30 with flare and glare and so forth? And we go on to, oh, it's higher order aberrations, it's HOAs. But truth be told, and the experts that I know say you can cure a lot of that by decentering. It's just decentered optics.
Right.
So if we can get lenses that will decenter the optics for us, we can easily quantify how much and where the optical center of the lens is vis-a-vis the line of sight. That'll be huge. And then actually, when there are higher order aberrations, when we can truly identify them, then it's one thing to identify them and show little Zernike images and say, oh, this is trefoil and this is, you know, fourth, you know, order coma. But it's another thing to put it into a lens. I think in 3 years, the lenses will fit, won't bear any resemblance to what we fit now. I think that just the technology is rolling out just quarterly, really. It's an amazing, it's so much fun.
Yeah, it's a field that has expanded so quickly. And I hope none of my patients listening, because I love showing those Zernike images to explain why there's nothing more that I can do.
That's fine. They're there and they're real, but you can map that, but you need to put that in the lens. Those are bumps, you know, in the wavefront. You need to put bumps on the lens to get that. And one other thing I forgot is eccentricity. We know that sometimes you can change the eccentricity of the lens. So if we can have maybe the manufacturers give us two or three options for eccentricity, and some do, but I'd like to see that more generally available.
Yeah, and I know that you're going to be talking about one that has the front surface eccentricity pretty soon, so we'll all look forward to that, joining you at that event as well. I have like a long list of exhaustive questions that I know I'm not going to get to, but I must ask two more. Can you stay on for two more questions with me?
Of course, yeah.
So I would love to know what you think is the most satisfying part of having successfully developed your own scleral lens practice?
My funny answer is making people cry. Love it when they cry. Grown Bubba men, big He-Man, you know, they just, you know, they start seeing maybe for the first time, and they're overwhelmed. So it's really neat to see that experience. And then the other thing is, you know, even putting a trial lens on, happened today actually with a lady. You put the lens on and they go, I can see. You know, they go, I can see. And I go, well, yeah, but you're going to see better when I over-refract you. But they go, oh, you don't understand. I can see. And they get real emotional. So we say in the scleral lens community, these lenses change lives.
Absolutely.
They change lives. They truly do. They change lives. And to be a part of that excitement and journey with them is just, it's the reason why I go to work every day.
But everybody, I think, can hear the passion in your voice. And I know we're being lighthearted here where we, you know, because you need humor to go through your whole day. But absolutely, the rewarding process, I can attest to that, is absolutely amazing when patients just wholeheartedly want to follow you and listen to you, and they just think that you're the person who changed their lives. So last question, because you are over the place, you're over the globe. I know you're about to head out of a country tomorrow to go to yet another exotic destination. So tell us a little bit about, you know, those of your fans out there, where can they find you next? Where do you usually go, and where are you going to be?
Tomorrow I'm going to Bogota, Colombia. So I don't know if anybody wants to go down there. It's Class Symposium 2018. There's over 1,000 doctors there registered. So I'm really humbled and gratified to be able to speak to them. Then I'm going to Dottie Fidel's Italian Scleral Lens Society in Rome. And I'm speaking to a lot of really well-known people, Greg Denier, Ed Boschnick, Melissa Barnett, Maria Walker, Elise Kramer, you know, and really famous people like Ken Pullum and Don Ezekiel. But I'm really excited about the one we have. Nate Schramm and I have our third annual International Congress of Scleral Contacts, and that's July 26th and 27th in Fort Lauderdale. So it's a full day of scleral lens education. Some of the names that I just mentioned will be there, and it's just great. Everybody's welcome. It's very affordable. Actually, Nate and I on Thursday afternoon are doing an intro to scleral lens fitting, and we invite everybody of any level to come, and we share some of the tips we talked about tonight, how to get started and take people through that. That is sponsored by Baas Shalom Specialty Vision Products. We appreciate their support, and they'll have ZenLens kits there so they can get some exposure to the ZenLens product. That's included in the price of the Congress, which is all day Friday. That website is icscmeeting.com.
Right.
icscmeeting.com. And I'm sorry you can't come, Clark. I know you have another conflict, but we expect a big turnout, over 200 people. And then also we have our Scleral Lens Fitters Facebook page, and that's just called Scleral Lens Fitters on Facebook. And that's, we have over 4,000 members there, and some of the greatest people in the world post there, and people are welcome to get help or learn or ask questions. And it's a very safe environment, and everybody's welcome.
Great. And I love how you just created that wonderful community on Facebook. And from the sound of it, you're not going to make it to the optometry meeting AOA in Denver.
No, unfortunately not.
I will be there if any listeners wants to find me there. And like I said, I wish I had more time with Dr. Arnold. I do want to thank Dr. Tom Arnold for being here today. And also to you, our listeners, for checking out this episode of my podcast. Please check back often for new episode releases, and I'll see you inside of the Chang Reaction next time. Thanks, everybody. Chang Reaction Nation can follow me on social media and also find me at eye care conferences throughout the year. So mark your calendars and journey on all the latest adventures with me. Don't forget to like, share, subscribe, comment on every episode. Let's stay connected until we meet next time here at the Chang Reaction.